Welcome, friends, to The Hero Beside Me, the podcast that seeks to explore the professional and private lives of working dogs of all kinds. For thousands of years, humans and canines have shared a special bond and an essential partnership, which continues to grow in importance in our society today. Dogs are helping humans in a myriad of ways, performing essential tasks that only they can perform. The more we learn about them, the more endless their potential seems to be. It is my goal to document the way these amazing animals are making an indelible mark on our world with their astonishing abilities, incredible drive, insatiable zest for life, and unconditional love, which they generously bestow upon their humans. Join me as I explore the wonder of these canine heroes beside us. Listeners, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here. Today, the topic of conversation is going to be zebra muscles. And we have with us Debbie Deshaun, owner of Muscle Dogs, to tell us all about what zebra muscles are, why they're a problem, and what dogs are doing to help solve the problem. But before we get into that, tell us, Debbie, who you are and your history with dogs.
Yeah, so I'm Debbie Deshaun, and I have been working detection dogs since 1996. Started out working school dogs, looking for contraband. And then in about 2008, I actually was invited to a demonstration of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife dogs doing a demo finding these muscles, these quagga muscles that were in Lake Mead. And that's when I got the idea to start a company around finding the invasive zebra and quagga muscles.
And did you also work with acting canines?
Yeah, that was another lifetime ago. Back in the day, I actually started out, I guess we can go all the way back. I went to UC Davis and I wanted to be a veterinarian and my grades weren't quite there. So after that, I went to Moorpark College, which is an exotic animal training and management program. And I went there basically trying to bring up my grades to get into the vet school. I still didn't get into vet school, but from there, I was working for the American Humane Society and Association. I was working for the American Humane Association, and I would actually go on the sets and make sure that any animals on the sets were being taken care of correctly. And from there, I actually met a trainer who wound up hiring me. And so I worked in movies and television for a while. So that was my beginning in working with dogs. The biggest show that I can think of that I worked on was Beethoven. So that was pretty cool.
How did you make the transition from that to detection dogs?
I got married and I moved to Northern California, where there's really not a lot of movie and televisions, especially back then, going on. And I was raising kids at the time. And when I decided it was about time to, you know, get into working again, and the school district where I lived was starting to use the contraband dogs, and I was like, hey, I can do that. And so that's how that all started. Then I pursued getting that job. It actually took me 3 years to even get the job. But then once I had it, it worked out.
So they just had dogs come check kids' lockers or what?
So the dogs would check the kids' lockers, backpacks, vehicles. The dogs find drugs, alcohol, gunpowder, and medications. The whole idea is really proactive. It's to give the students another reason not to bring something to school. Unfortunately, if they make a poor decision, then we might find it.
Is that common?
Yeah, it's actually pretty common. I'm still involved in that as well. And yeah, you mean common for them to have bring something or for the dogs to work?
common to use dogs.
Yeah, no, it's pretty common. It's nationwide, and it's fairly common. It's a really good proactive program because, like I said, it just gives kids another reason not to bring something. And we certainly don't want any of those things at school.
Is it the sort of thing where they never know which day a dog's going to be there, or every day the dog checks everybody?
Yeah, no, it's real random. So they never know when we're coming.
That's cool. Is that like the county hires independent contractors?
Each school district. So everywhere is different. So sometimes it's school district to city, sometimes it's county or whatever. So whoever's running the school district would make the decision on whether they wanted to utilize contraband dogs or not.
What was it like working on Beethoven?
Beethoven was a ton of fun. My mentor, Carl Lewis Miller, was absolutely amazing. And it was a lot of fun. I worked a lot not with Beethoven himself. I worked more when there was like packs of dogs. So we would do stuff like, you know, release 15 dogs and having them run a certain direction or what have you.
Huh. I would never have thought of that being a thing, but how did you get 15 dogs to run in the same direction?
Oh, you had somebody with treats or what have you where you wanted them to all end up, and you just conditioned them to run to that person or what have you.
Your job working in show business with dogs versus your dog handling detection dogs, compare and contrast the pros and cons of each. Which one do you like better?
So in comparing working a detection dog to training for movies and television, it's very different, because in movies and television, actually, like, you don't want obedience. You want the dogs to look real natural. And so you're usually training them for like a specific task, you know, or a specific scene, a specific task. And you want it, like I said, you want it to be real natural. So you don't want like the dog immediately healing. And so it's very different. With detection dogs, you're working off of the dog's natural desire to retrieve or to get their toy. The way that we do it is we actually look for like absolutely ball crazy dogs. And then we teach the dog to play this huge game of hide and seek. They're looking for their toy in their mind. And then we just make their toy smell like the odor. Then when they find it, they get their toy. So in truth, a detection dog is just playing this huge game of hide and seek, looking for their toy. And when they find it, they give us an indication and they get their toy. So it's a big game. And the dog has to have the desire to do it. You can't make them do it, especially in our setting. We're, you know, out at ramps in the heat for hours a day. And so you have to have this dog that just like instinctively just wants to play this game. This ball crazy dog that like do anything for their ball and will play all day long. And so it's quite different. The motivation's different, and what we're training is very different.
Are acting canines mostly, do they usually use food to motivate them?
Yeah, with acting dogs, a lot of it is food reward, or you can, even if you use like a clicker for clicker training, usually you're using food reward. It's real popular.
So tell us about the company that you own now.
So I own Muscle Dogs, which is the dogs that go to the lakes to help keep them muscle free. And basically, we're at the entrance stations as boaters or watercraft owners are entering. And our dogs are checking their watercrafts to make sure that they do not have any quagga or zebra mussels on them. And with that, we're also educating the boaters, because they all want to know why there's a dog there and what the dog's doing. And so it works out really, really nice because we get this opportunity to educate them and to have them understand why the muscles are so bad and the part that they can do by cleaning, draining, and drying their boats or watercrafts so that they're not inadvertently spreading these muscles or even invasive plants or any invasives.
So what is the deal with these muscles?
So quagga and zebra mussels are a very invasive freshwater mussel. They originally came over into the United States in the Great Lakes, and that was back like in the 80s. And not until 2008 did they actually make it west to Lake Mead, which is in Nevada. So once they made it west, all of a sudden, you know, everybody in the west is like, okay, we really need to stop them from spreading. But of course, they still spread like down the Colorado River and they're in Southern California, but they're not in Northern California yet. They're not in Oregon. They're not in Washington. They're not in Idaho. And so it's real important for us to try to keep them from spreading the best that we can. The big problem with them is what they do is they're filter feeders. And so, and they also are extremely prolific. And so if they get established in a lake, they basically take over with their numbers because they're so prolific. And they're filter feeders. So they're filter feeding all of the plankton and the wonderful small things out of the water that other animals would normally be eating. So then those animals aren't available for other animals to eat. And so it really changes the entire ecosystem because the food chain just completely changes. Another thing that they do is in their filter feeding, especially at first, is they actually clear the water the water gets clearer. But one of the issues with that is the sun then can penetrate farther down. And then we get all kinds of things that algal blooms and things that will grow that wouldn't normally have grown. So then you have all kinds of issues with that as well. So they just, they completely change the ecosystem and affect all kinds of things with that. The other thing is they die and they're very small, sharp shells. And so they litter your shorelines with these sharp shells, which, you know, people and dogs and will cut their feet on. And they stick to hard surfaces. So if we've got a lake or a waterway that is used for water to drink or for irrigation, they actually will cling to the pipes, the inside of the pipes, and they'll start clogging the pipes as well. So there's just so many bad things that happen if a group of them infest a lake.
So they find their way into lakes by being transported on the boats of people who are coming from a different lake?
Right. So most often the way that they're spread is they've attached themselves to a boat. They have what are called Bissell threads, and these little threads let them hold on. And so if a boat has been in a lake that has them, they may have attached themselves to the boat, or even their larvae are free floating in the water. And so they could be like in a ballast tank of water or even in the engine area, you know, the pipes or what have you in a boat. And they're actually quite hardy. They can live up to 30 days outside of the water. And so if that boater leaves one infested lake and then goes to another lake, gets in the water, turns on their engine, releases their ballast tank water, or what have you, they could inadvertently be spreading them.
And so your dogs are there as the boaters enter the boat ramp and they check out the boats and let the owner know that you have, that they have muscles attached?
Yeah. So usually we're not exactly at the boat ramp. Usually we're at the entrance stations before they even get to the boat ramp, and the dogs check them. And then if the dogs did find muscles on their boat, then every state's a little bit different. But in California, we would call California Department of Fish and Wildlife and they would be asked to wait for them to get there, and the boat would need to be decontaminated and then possibly quarantined, you know, just to make sure that all the mussels are dead before they're allowed to launch in California.
So the dogs can discover full-grown mussels and also larvae?
Yeah, so the larvae is called the veligers. The dogs can find the mussels in all stages, including the veliger stage. And we've actually done research on that. We have, in 2016, we had a paper published proving that the dogs could find the veligers. And then there have been a couple other experiments done since then, reproving it. And we're actually really excited. In September of this year, 2021, we will be doing an experiment with Texas Tech University. And we'll actually be seeing the very lowest level that the dogs can find the veligers at. And if we get down to, say, one, we're even going to see if the dogs can just find the eDNA in the water.
Oh, wow. Once a lake is infested, is there any way to rid it of these pests?
So, unfortunately, the simple answer to that is basically, the simple answer to whether an infested lake can be treated is no. There have been a couple of very small reservoirs that have had the mussels where they've like completely drained them and done a couple of different treatments with them, and they have gotten rid of them. But like there's like two or three cases in the whole United States. So at the moment, we basically would say no, that there's no way to get rid of them once you have them.
Is this a problem in other countries as well, as far as you know?
Yeah, I mean, Canada's trying to keep them out as well. They actually came over originally from Europe and so of Ukraine, but they're not a problem there. That's where they're native, but they're a major problem here.
So what can listeners do to help?
So the basic thing that a listener can do to help is clean, drain, and dry. And truthfully, I mean, let's not be narrow-minded and only talk about mussels. If you are going to be boating or visiting any of our beautiful lakes, just, you know, make sure that any of your equipment, including like your waders, if you're fishing, make sure they're cleaned as whenever you leave any water body, because you can be spreading other things besides mussels as well, including plants and other animals like New Zealand mud snails or what have you. So just being really aware of where you are and making sure that your watercraft or any of your equipment is clean, drain, and dry is what everybody can be doing to help. The other thing that people can do is there's a campaign called Don't Let It Loose, and it's for people who have like aquariums or pets, and you know, never just to let these things loose. That's how the invasive pythons in Florida have become a problem. You know, it was originally possibly from people letting loose their pet. You dump your aquarium out thinking it's no big deal, but if you had plants in there that are invasive, now you've spread the plants. Or they literally just had an issue where moss balls that you use in aquariums were found at like pet stores in well over 40 states and Canada that had the mussels in them because they had actually been imported from Ukraine. And so that became a vector, and it's actually a really big deal right now, is trying to make sure that nothing like that happens again.
Now, your company offers training of dogs looking for other sorts of things too. Is that true?
My parent company is called Dogs with Jobs, and we will train dogs for other things as well through our Dogs with Jobs company. We've done things like we've trained some PTSD dogs for veterans with PTSD. And we've trained a bed bug dog. I've trained two dogs to work at wineries, one that found Brettomyces and another one that found what's called cork taint. So pretty much, you know, whatever the need is, if it's something, you know, that we can train the dogs to find, then we'll go ahead and do it.
What is cork taint or Brettomyces?
Brettomyces. So Brettomyces is actually something that you use to make beer with, but it's not something you want in your wine. You don't want your wine to ferment and taste like beer. So Brettomyces is something that you really don't want at your winery because it'll affect the grapes, it'll affect the wine, it'll make it start fermenting. And so that's what that is. And then cork taint, it'll grow like on the corks. And so, and it smells like mildew. It's actually really disgusting. And it'll ruin your wine and it'll make your wine taste like mildew. So that's not a good thing either. So that's something that we had been asked to see if the dogs could find and train. And so we were able to do that.
Is there anything dogs can't do or can't find if trained? It just seems like they're being used for more and more things all the time. It seems like the sky is the limit.
Yeah, I mean, the dogs are absolutely amazing. And the fact that, like, literally with the muscle dogs, that we have proven that these dogs can find these microscopic villagers, right? And, I mean, I'm so excited, like I said, to do this research study because it's going to be really interesting to see how few villagers. I know that there was one study done that another group did that they got it down to 9 villagers. And so it's going to be so interesting. But I mean, yeah, dogs can find cancer cells. So those are microscopic and they're just amazing what their abilities are. I think that we just don't know at this point.
How do you run your business? Are you like a franchise? Do you have clients that hire you for a season or how does it work?
So the way that we run our muscle dog business is we basically have clients that hire us to check the boats during the boating season coming into their lake. So all of the lakes that we work at, it's seasonal right now, except for there's a couple that have finally gone year round. And so we are checking boats every day. During the week, when it's fewer boats, we don't even have a dog there. We just have humans doing a visual inspection. But on the weekends, you know, when you have a couple hundred boats, the difference is a human to do a good inspection is going to take, you know, maybe 4 or 5, depending on the size of the boat, you know, 4 or 5, 10 minutes to do a really good inspection, where the dogs can literally do it in less than a minute. You know, they just go around and sniff it. So when on the busy weekends, having the dogs there is essential because we're able to get the boaters through the line so much faster. And of course the dogs are more efficient because like they can smell the villagers, which if a human could never even see them because they're microscopic. So it's, you know, pretty valuable having the dogs there. The other thing that we have done as well is like we sold and trained the handler up in Washington at the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. So we trained Puddles, and go check out Puddles. She's so cute. For Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. And then the handler came down and we trained the handler how to work the dog. And for 2 years, you know, we did all kinds of refresher trainings and, you know, made sure that they were a good match. So we've done that as well.
So the dogs are detecting the, it sounds like you're saying villagers.
Villagers. It's V-E-L-I-G-E-R-S.
Villagers. They can detect those in a tank that's inside the boat somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, they
that's amazing.
Yeah. They're amazing. I mean, the dogs are absolutely amazing.
And are you working all across the U.S.?
Most of our work is in California. We also do some work in Texas. And I've been, last year, I did some work in Wyoming. I've been obviously to Washington. So we'll pretty much go wherever the need is. We're not just in California.
Do you know if there's any other organization out there doing the same work?
Working Dogs for Conservation does a lot of research and work, and I know that they have trained some of their dogs to find mussels as well. But I don't believe that they like staff ramps like we do, like a full-time job type of thing. They do more like I know one year they did this wonderful tour of like the national parks, and they'd be at a national park for a week or two doing press conferences and doing demonstrations and checking boats as well. But you know, more on an educational basis than like in everyday, this is what we do all day long basis.
Because there's so many bodies of water where people use boats, it seems like it would be an overwhelming task.
Well, it's, you know, every lake has their own policies, and you know, choose how to do their inspection. So like in Colorado, they still do inspections. They just don't use dogs at this point. I'm sure they'll all come around.
Well, is there anything else that you think the listeners should know they might not already about detection dogs or conservation or pest control or anything?
Well, I mean, what I would love for the listeners to take away from this is that they absolutely can do their part not to spread invasive species and to help keep our waterways clean and fresh and wonderful by, you know, being aware of what they're bringing in, by keeping, you know, their equipment clean. Also, my PSA for the day would be, anything you bring in, would you please take out with you as well? Don't leave trash. Don't leave a footprint. Don't affect our natural areas by being disrespectful and leaving something. If you bring it in, please take it out with you. And that includes dog poop, right? If you're taking your dogs with you and they have a poop, you should pick it up, right? Because you're affecting the wildlife in that area, even just by that. So, you know, do your part. That's what I would really like people to take away from this, is that we all have an effect, and it, as best you can, do your part to leave it nice for everybody else.
I completely agree. And if someone wanted to get in touch with you, how would they do so?
The best way to get in touch with me is through my websites, muscledogs.info or dogswithjobs.info. Either of those, you can click on the contact us and send me an email, and that'd be the best way to get a hold of me.
Thanks so much for being on the show, Debbie, and also for the work that you're doing for our lakes.
My pleasure, and thank you so much for having me on. It was an honor.
Thank you for listening to the show today. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or a number of other platforms. As I mentioned earlier, I'm your host, Shauna T. I'm a professional photographer, and I'm currently working on a photography project about working dogs. If you would like information about this project, please visit herobeside.me and sign up for the newsletter. Again, that's herobeside.me. Thanks so much. See you next time.